Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 166 of Getting It Out Podcast. That was Final Plan with Dimensions from their closed casket secret split with My Luck, which came out like 20 years ago and isn't relevant anymore, other than the fact that I love that song. I love that split. Might be my favorite split of all time. I have so many things I can say about it. I'm going to do that briefly here. I bought that split because of My Luck. I saw My Luck play a show near my house with Striking Distance and Worn Thin and Desperate Measures when I was a wee lad, probably still maybe 11th grade, 10th grade, somewhere around there. And My Luck, this band from Texas, seemed wild to me when they played. Their drummer stood up. That's all he did. He stood up, but his drums fell over. The vocalist might have jumped into him. I don't know. Something about the drums and My Luck I vaguely remember being intense and like nothing I'd ever seen before. So I remember being at the Chameleon Club in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, rest in peace, just closed this past summer. Anyway, I was there and for some other show, and I went back to some distro, and I found this CD with My Luck and Final Plan, and I didn't have anything physical from My Luck yet, so I really excitedly bought that CD, and then the first side of it is that song. That's the first song, is Dimensions by Final Plan, and it's like three more songs by Final Plan, and it blew me away, and I loved it, and I still do. And just over the summer, I finally got a vinyl copy of this record too. Anyway, this is more information than you need to know, other than the fact that it's Final Plan from Cleveland. Some weird Getting It Out Podcast ties. That song, This Side of the Split, was produced by Steve Felton, also known as Skinny Mac. Skinny Mac, the drummer for Mushroomhead, who was a guest on Getting It Out Podcast in 2020. So there you go. There's your tie-in. Hope you enjoyed it. A little bit of facts for you. Anyway, that's the way we're starting this episode. High energy. And we're going to try and keep it that way. Sorry if it's a little echoey right now. New basement, still filling it in with furniture. So you'll deal with it. I'll deal with it. We'll get by. This episode features an interview with Matt Anderson. He's the vocalist for Purgatory. Purgatory's from the Midwest. We'll try to nail that down for you when we talk to him. But he's from the Midwest, and they got a record coming out on Unbeaten. It's called Lawless to Grave, and it rules. It comes out April 9th, so be ready for it. We're giving you a little bit of notice. So let's do the Hot Zone intro and then get the fuck going.
Yeah, what's good, all you bitches and bitches? It's the illustrious Hot Zone, back at it again with another podcast intro. He said, oh, you want to do a podcast intro for the Getting It Out podcast? I said, oh, shit, I got to write a rap verse, don't I? He said, no, you don't got to write a rap verse. It's a hardcore podcast. I said, all right, I think I can maybe make that happen. Let's see what we can do. Kick it. Make family out of friends, make friends out of enemies. Peace to my family, make friends till they bury me. All the places we've been, we're never sitting it out. We be getting it in, where you getting it out? I said all the places we've been, we're never sitting it out. We'll be getting it in, where you getting it out? Get in and out! Alright, motherfuckers, you're in the right place at the right time. Rest in peace, Jay Money, and LFTW forever!
Okay, maybe it's premature, but I'm going to say that spring is here in Pennsylvania. We did it, we made it, and now it's going to snow for the next 3 weeks because I said that. That's Mother Nature being mean, as she usually is. Nobody ever mentions Mother Nature when she's nice. Right now she's being nice, although it's a little rainy. On my trip I just made. I just made a drive out to Philadelphia back. It's a little bit rainy. A lot of bit to the point where you're slipping and sliding on the turnpike going 70. That feels dangerous. I bet it is. I was told a stat once that once you get in a car wreck, once you hit that 70 mile per hour mark, the survival rate for accidents drops to like 40%. That's not good odds. I don't want to die like that, especially I don't want to die all soggy and wet either. So I was safe. I didn't turn on my four ways like the other people did just now. I feel like that's a little bit of a nerd move. My car is dark. People can see me, I hope. I'm not turning on my four ways like that. That's going too far. Too cautious for me. I live a little bit on the edge. You know, I'm dangerous, they would say, to my own health. But, you know, whatever. I smoked for like 15 years. I clearly am not very intelligent or take wise risks, you know. That's going to come back to get me one day. One day when everything's said and done and my body like turns on me, I'm gonna have to accept it. I smoked for 15 years, probably more. It was 16, probably like 17. Let's say 17. I smoked cigarettes. Do you smoke cigarettes? It's okay if you do, but it stinks. Okay, anyway, I don't want to get into that. There was a Jeep in front of me going through the toll booths, and as I mentioned on previous episodes, toll booths now are like a challenge. They put that speedometer right there to tell you how fast you're going, or the speed radar, I guess we'd call it, and they went through it like 12 miles per hour. The suggested speed limit is 5, and they went through a 12. Total nerd. You got to get through that thing at least at 30. It's a challenge. That's why they have the thing there. You don't have to pay anybody any money. You just go, all right? It's freedom. It's the new world. Are they ever going to bring back toll booth people? I think I've talked about that too many times on the podcast, so let's move on. Anyway, this Jeep had Rough Country stickers all over it. Do you know what that is? Neither do I. But I see this a lot on Jeeps. They always have Rough Country sticker. What does that mean? It's almost like the Salt Life sticker, but Rough Country. This car didn't look rough at all. This looks really pristine and nice. Is it Rough Country Club? Am I missing something? Are we using rough differently these days? I know the kids have changed the word aesthetic. I know that doesn't mean aesthetic anymore. It means something that I don't understand. It's weird to be one of these adults who's trying to understand teenagers. It's very weird. And it's very weird to not be good at it. You always think you're going to grow up and be able to still be cool in the eyes of a younger generation. But let me tell you from firsthand experience, you're not, I'm not, we're nerds. We're dorks, we're geeks. I mean, they are, but they think we are. Do you know how that works? I'm sure you do. But we don't need to get all into that either. We need to get into the fact that I have Matt Anderson from Purgatory on this episode of the podcast. And we, as I mentioned in the intro, are going to talk about their Unbeaten records. full length that is dropping April 9th. It's called Lawless to Grave, and there's plenty of things to say about it, and we're going to do a good job chatting it up and giving you information and making you all feel warm inside, but not too warm because that would be weird. But yeah, let's check out the track No One Gets Out Alive and then get into the interview with Matt.
The land that you became is what sets us apart. You betrayed our love, became the thing you hate.
No one gets out alive!
What's up, Matt? How you doing?
Good, good. How you doing?
I'm good. It's Monday, right? And
it is Monday.
But Monday's almost over. I don't know about you, but I stereotypically hate Mondays.
You know, I hate this Monday exceptionally because my busy season at work just started today, so we were busting ass all day, and it's Monday. Yeah, I'm with you.
What do you do for work?
I'm a hardscaping foreman, so I do like paver patios and walls and like block walls and all that kind of stuff.
I'm gonna need you to come over to my house. I want a chimney in my backyard. Can you do that for me?
I can do that. Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Come on over. yeah. No, I guess this is, wait a minute. I was going to ask you this anyway. And by the way, we're already going. All right. We're already recording for this thing, if that's all right with you.
Okay.
But,
cool.
You guys, Purgatory. All right. Yeah. Let's get, you are Matt and you do vocals for Purgatory, correct?
Yeah.
And everything I see about Purgatory says Midwest. And I don't know what that means because that covers a lot of ground. So where exactly are you?
So we are located in Yeah, you can hear that.
Yeah.
Is it? It's not overwhelmingly loud.
No.
Is it?
No, it's good. I like it.
Okay. So we're located in Northwest Indiana. Kind of the, I don't want to say like the heart of the band is, but there's three of us here in Northwest Indiana. So we're like about 2 hours west of Indianapolis. So we're not too far from Chicago and everything, about 40 miles from Chicago or so. And then one of the dudes, Josh, who plays guitar, he lives out in Arizona.
Oh, shit.
And then our bass player, Tito, he just moved down to Alabama from Tennessee.
Wow. So you guys are all spread out.
Yeah.
That's cool. I don't know why that's cool, but I just think that's cool. Indiana, I don't know about you, but I'm a bit of a jock, a bit of a sports guy. So, and especially basketball. So anytime I hear Indiana, I always think about Reggie Miller and Indiana Pacers, and that probably has nothing to do with anything that you're about, but I just wanted to say that. Get my basketball reference in early.
I grew up playing all kinds of sports. I was a hockey player for a really long time, and I played a little bit of football. But I've dabbled in a lot. So, yeah, I'm still 100% a jock.
Hell yeah. there's been this rule that we're like, you know, this unspoken rule that if you can't be into sports and still be in the hardcore or metal or, you know, extreme music. And I have always said, fuck that. I like both and always have. So I'm glad to hear there's plenty more of us out there.
Yeah, that's a super weird rule. It's like, oh, you can't be in hardcore because you like to take care of yourself. Okay.
Yeah, but I think, but ironically, I think there is usually a funny correlation between like fat slobs loving football and like skinny straight edge dudes like just being into art, you know, like the one thing.
Yeah, that is kind of true. There is a good stereotype with that. So,
but anyway, okay. So you're like I said in purgatory. We're talking because you got a record coming out called Lawless to Grave on Unbeaten Records. That comes out on April 9th, I want to say, which I know you guys did on purpose because that's my brother's birthday.
So 100%.
He'll like that.
So, yeah, that's right, though. It's our follow-up LP to Cold Side of Reality, and it comes out April 9th. And it's our second full-length with Unbeaten Records. So working with Buddy is a dream.
It must be, because everybody I talk to seems to love working with Buddy. Everybody I talk to that works with Buddy seems to love working with Buddy. And I enjoy working with Buddy on the few things that I've done, too. So, I can... There's that whole... And I bring this up every time I talk to somebody on Unbeaten Records, that when you kind of see that name, Unbeaten Records, like, okay, well, I know this is going to be of a certain quality, right? But before we get all into that, can we do some real basic stuff? Like the first question should be, and this will be a good one for you, is yes. How often do you wash your legs?
Well, I mean, I basically shower almost every day because I'm filthy when I get home.
Yeah, I
wash my legs, but... Hey, listen, I'm not going to say that I always wash my feet, though.
Okay, that's a good point. Yeah. You're being honest.
You know, I've learned to do that a little more because I did realize, like, fellas or ladies, you know, if the soap is just running down there, it's not washing them.
That's right. And that's why a lot of people don't wash their legs, because they think they're just getting runoff and they're good. But, you know, you need to scrub or else... Or else it's not doing any good.
Yeah.
But okay, I haven't busted that question out for a while, so I thought it was time to get a new answer on that one. But,
amazing
yeah.
intro question.
Yeah. But okay, so all right, no. Okay, real question is Indiana. All right, I'm thinking Indiana hardcore, Indiana metal, or Indiana anything extreme, heavy. The only thing, and I know there's definitely other Indiana bands that I'm not picking up right now off the top of my head, but the first one that I think of, whether this is a good thing or not, is was Blood In, Blood Out an Indiana band?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're from our area, and you can't talk about Indiana hardcore or metal even without talking about Blood and Blood Out.
Okay, so that's one I can think of. But for you, I don't know how old you are, but for you, who was like the local band that you were going to see like regularly?
As far as Indiana is concerned,
I don't know whatever you consider local, regular occurrence in your scene.
So I'm not from Indiana. So for me, it would have been Nodes of Ranvier from South Dakota, because that's where I grew up.
Oh my God, South Dakota! I didn't know there people actually lived there.
yeah. So. Yeah, this is gonna be a fun interview, because you're gonna probably find out a lot of stuff and be like, "What the fuck?" Like,
I remember, no way. I remember Nodes of Ranvier. They were like a face down metalcore band, right?
Yeah, and they eventually went over to Victory and everything. But I grew up there. One of the guys that played bass in the band and became the singer for a while, his younger twin brothers went to high school with me, and then I had some other friends that were in like death metal and stuff, but I became really good friends with those guys, and we used to go to just a ton of shows together. And yeah, I mean, Nodes was the band that I rarely ever missed a show. So,
wow, that's so South Dakota. This is even crazier than Indiana. What else is happening in South Dakota? How did you like? I know. I sound like one of these dickheads on a coast, and I am. Okay. So you have to forgive me. But like the idea of, I don't know. I put on an episode today where I was talking to a guy, Spencer, from this band Endgame in Calgary, Canada. You know, and to me that's like, okay, what the fuck? How did that happen? How did you guys have radios up there? You know, and but that's like the same thing. Like when I think of the Dakotas, I think of that bum Carson Wentz they gave us, and that's about it. You know, and so. But I know for a fact that I'm being an idiot, and that's very unfair of me. So what else has happened? Like for you, how did you find heavy music like this out in South Dakota?
I was exposed to like hard rock and typical classic rock from my dad and his brothers at a younger age, and that was definitely like the opening, like the portal to finding out about that kind of music. I was exposed to it right off the bat. Like my dad was like a metalhead, and
what was his big band?
He loved like AC/DC and you know Van Halen and things like that. Like it was all like very very classic rock, but there would be things intertwined in there, like a little bit of Slayer and a little bit of Metallica and stuff.
That's awesome.
He actually, like, he used to go to Ozfest before it was like a big popular known thing.
Yeah.
And he saw Metallica on Ozfest, I'm pretty sure, before they were like this massive national band. And he had given me a bunch of cassette tapes when I was younger, and there was like a dubbed Slayer one on there. You saw Slayer like when they were pretty young, and I had a Metallica cassette tape where it was just a Hit the Light single off of Kill 'Em All,
mm-hmm.
and then the other side was just an instrumental. And he had the No Life to Leather, like a dub of it. I don't know if he just got that. It definitely wasn't like an original.
Yeah,
but that's. So Metallica was like that was a big opening thing for me as well. But AC/DC, him and his brother John, I mean, any time that we'd be around, Back in Black was just always playing. And as I got like a little older, I'm only talking like fifth grade or so, I actually just talked about this recently, but it's always fun to talk about. I had a friend in elementary school who had older brothers that were into like punk and metal and stuff like that, but they just gave me like this big stack of CDs, and there was generic stuff that you listen to. I'm going to be 35 in August, so like the stuff that was generic when we were younger was obviously like Limp Bizkit and Korn and like typical nu metal stuff.
Yeah, awesome stuff. But, okay, I'm 36 right now, and that stuff was awesome then. It's still awesome now. All right, we can still say that. It's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it is. I'm not going to say that about Limp Bizkit, because if I try to listen to Limp Bizkit now, which I don't, but if
no
they come
way.
On, I'm just like,
come on,
like,
man.
This is not one that I can do.
$3 Bill, y'all, is an absolute classic. All right.
I would agree. I would agree. $3 Bill, y'all, and Significant Other they're definitely classics. Like they are. They still stand the test of time. Like younger kids still find out about it and listen to it. But as I get older, I kind of stray away from that. But a lot of the other bands that were like on the Family Values tours and stuff, those are bands that I still listen to.
That's fair. I'll take that.
But within this stack of CDs, and like I said, I tell the story all the time, so I'll never forget it. There was a Deicide CD in there.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I didn't know what Deicide meant or anything. I just saw the logo and I was like, okay, it was their self-titled CD. I was like, well, this looks way different than everything else. You know, there's not a bunch of dudes wearing like backward fitted hats on the covers and stuff.
Right.
And I put it in the CD player, and the music that started coming out of the speakers, I was like, what the fuck is going on right now? Like, this is the craziest stuff I've ever heard in my life. And after I heard that CD, like, I mean, it was like my whole world opened up to some other part of life that I obviously didn't know existed. And I just wanted more, you know? So that really, really opened the door to like listening to a ton of metal. And then through metal, that's how I found out about a lot of punk and hardcore.
Yeah.
Because there a lot of those bands back then were like very intertwined, you know, like Dying Fetus used to listen to a ton of hardcore. Like they played with hardcore bands all the time, and Skinless and stuff like that. But that's how I got into the Misfits and like Danzig when I was super young. But obviously that's a natural introduction to Black Flag and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And the bands that Chuck Biscuits from Danzig used to play in, because he played in a ton of big punk bands and stuff. Like, that was my portal to heavy music, though.
Well, that's good. That's pretty diverse for heavy music. You had a little bit of everything, a little death metal, a little nu metal, a little punk, a little hardcore. And that's me now still, you know. You mentioned like Dying
Sure.
Fetus being Yeah. into hardcore, and I spent a lot of years in Baltimore. And yeah, there's Dying Fetus is well known as fans of hardcore. They even did that Next Step Up cover of Bringing Back the Glory, which I don't know how many people are aware of that one these days, but they should be. I mean, of Next Step Up, right? That band never got a whole lot of love. But they should have, or maybe in revisionist time they will. But anyway, and then like you said, Deicide. Do you remember what Deicide record that was?
It was the self-titled one. It's got the
okay,
it's a black yeah. cover, and it just has like the seal on the front, like the emblem on the front.
Right. Well, I was hoping it was Once Upon the Cross, so I could preach that that's the best one. But I'll take that one. The self-titled and Legion will. They measure up as well, and people would say that they're the better ones. So either way, I'll give you.
I'm with you. I think Once Upon the Cross is their best record. Like, there's just no denying it. It has like that has the best songs on it.
I you know what really gets me on that one, and what probably pushes it past the other ones for me, and it comes down to just this because I think they're all so even. Is just the cover art. I love the way that record looks.
Right.
It was
right.
awesome.
Yeah, it's eye appealing, that's for sure. Even like the edited versions that they had. So
I don't know if I've seen an edited version, but I'm sure I have. But anyway, so okay, so you get into all this, and I don't know, like you said, you're 35, so you and I are very similar ages. When did you start playing in bands and actually get involved in your scene?
I had like a funny little band in fifth grade that like wasn't a real band, so it doesn't count. It's just like funny to talk about now.
Yeah.
But when I was in middle school going into like early high school, I had bought a guitar from a pawn shop with a friend, and like he had a practice amp as well, and he would just come over to my place and like we'd play like the worst stuff that you could possibly play on guitar, like, but we just did it like as loud and as fast as we could. No idea what we were doing. Like, I learned, he showed me what a power chord was, and it was just like, okay, well, I'm just going to slide my fingers all over the place and play as fast as I can. And, like, we were just like these dorky little preteen kids, like, playing, I guess what you would call, like, a form of punk in my bedroom. And then we had a friend come over, no drummer, no anything. It was very, it was very Rick to Life-ish.
Yeah, yeah.
You got somebody that plugs into a practice amp as well, and he's singing. I think it was like a karaoke machine, and somebody's just screaming in this karaoke machine, and we're just not even playing the same things. But after a while, that like I learned London Dungeon on guitar, and that kind of like taught all of us to like. So we learned a lot of Misfits covers, like, super early, and that was like, okay, like we can like slow down and like actually try and like play songs. And then this band was very short-lived, but it was called the Goats, and it stood for Government Officials Are Total Shit. But we were
so it wasn't like about Tom Brady, I guess.
No.
It was LeBron. But wait, South Dakota. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Too young back then.
Yeah.
I think I'm. But so that was like the first introduction, being like, okay, like we could, like we're kids, but we can still like get instruments and play music. But it was never anything serious. My first like serious band that I sang for, I was like 17, but there was a band from South Dakota called Bench Press, but it wasn't, there's another band that got bigger called Bench Press
from Pennsylvania.
I was like, oh, you were in that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
They were on the podcast before.
You were in that band? Okay. Oh, nice. Nice. Well, if they happen to listen to this, like, we were around first, but you guys were way bigger than I was.
Oh, shit, we bench
pressed. Don't worry. Everybody is always like, oh, you were in that band? I was like, no, we were not in that band. That band was way better than mine. Like, no. But we were a legit band. We put out, we had like a little demo, and then we put out an EP, and then we like paid for our own full length, and we were just kind of like, just a very like broad local band. We mainly played in different parts of South Dakota, and then like I think went to Minnesota, and we played one single show in Colorado, which is like 12 hours away. We drove there, played. It was awful. But we played with like, we played with Killing Kings. I think Fight Like Hell might have played, if you remember those bands.
Absolutely. My good friend Matt Strum played in Fight Like Hell, and they once played Pennsylvania. I walked up to him, and this is how I met him. And I told him, I love your band, but your name is terrible.
That's amazing. Yeah. So we played a legendary venue. This is like my only claim to fame with this band is we got to play Sox Place when Sox Place still existed. And that was like, one of the coolest venues I've ever seen, and that was in Denver. I mean, the show was like super fun, but yeah, we were around for like a couple of years. We kind of like were very reminiscent of Two Pure to Die and X Tyrant X, and just like that stuff that was big in like 2004.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Kind of big, straight edge metalcore, not metalcore, but also it was metalcore. I don't know if you know what I'm saying. Yeah.
That's exactly how I describe it. It was like metalcore with a bunch of tough guy shit in it. Remember when we were younger and tough guy was an actual genre?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that just meant somebody in the band wore a headband or a basketball jersey.
Yeah. I wore both.
Yeah.
Partially because of Johnny, the singer for Seventh Star, did the same thing, and I was like, well, that guy looks cool, so I can do that too. So yeah, I I wore a headband and a jersey and like bandanas under flat bill hats and like the Ooh, diamond earrings, the nice. Whole, you know. Like,
yeah, what was the jerseys? Man. What jerseys were you wearing? Let's talk about that.
I probably just had like some stupid local Sioux Falls one. I definitely had like a custom made one with our area code on it.
Oh, that's hard. That's
a big 605 on the front of it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And then, yeah, I mean, probably like whatever jerseys I could find at like the thrift store. So I probably had like a New York Knicks one and like, I don't know, probably like a Phoenix Suns one or something.
Well, like, that's good if it's
whatever you would
one.
Find at a thrift store.
I hear you. All right. So you do this, you do bench press for a while. You got some experience at least playing in a band, and let's fast forward to how you end up in purgatory. Where does this come from? Because obviously you got to move, I assume. And and now, so let's fast forward a little bit to how you end up as part of purgatory.
So in like 2011, I had moved down to Nebraska, and there had been a pre-existing band down there called Vandalize, and like not a lot of people knew that I had played in bands before, but when the vocalist for Vandalize was moving off to Baltimore, I think, they came up to me at a show, and they were like, yo, like, after this dude moves, we want you to sing for Vandalize. Like, are you down? I was like, I mean, yeah, that's cool. Like, yeah, you know, I'll play. I was like, we're going to rewrite some of the songs, and like, I'm changing your lyrics because I think your lyrics suck. And he was like, for real? Like all of them? And I was like, I mean, yeah, like your band kind of blows, dude, but you guys are my friends. So yeah, like, well, let's do it. And so, yeah, I joined and we played one show technically under the moniker Vandalize. And then we played one show under the moniker Hard Pack. And I was like, look, like, where I want to play like real music and write like real songs and have like a real band name, like if you guys want to take this seriously. And we wrote a demo called Hell on Earth, and I was like, yo, like, what do you guys think about calling the band Purgatory, because they took it from a Slayer song. And everybody's like, yeah, that's hard, that's cool. And like, that's when like Old English Font was super popular.
Yeah.
And you know, it was all about just like being like borderline metal, but hard at the same time, like Harm's Way and Nails and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Forfeit. Like, so yeah, we changed. We wrote a demo called Hell on Earth, and I wrote like basically that whole entire demo on an electric guitar with no amp. I didn't own an amp and my guitar didn't work. So I would play up in my room at the house that I lived at, and then I would go to my roommate or my other bandmate's house or wherever we'd practice, be like, all right, like, I need to plug into your amp to see how this sounds. And then some of the stuff was like, yo, this is sick as hell. The other stuff was like, well, now that I can hear what this sounds like with a real amp, this is really bad. But I wrote a good chunk of that stuff, and we played off of those songs for like a while. We played a ton of shows around like our area of the Midwest, like Nebraska, and we went over to Iowa a lot. And those were like, it was just bouncing back and forth between those areas. And then I moved into a house with the bass player and the guitar player. And for some reason, like anytime the idea of practice would be brought up, it was just like, you know, I don't know if I'm feeling it, or I don't know, we're kind of busy right now. And it was like them like watching baseball on TV. So, you know,
oh,
like, okay.
Baseball. So you guys, that's the worst.
Yeah. You know, like I back in the day, I was a big Red Sox fan, but I can't like sit and watch baseball on the TV though. Not all nine innings, but that took away from like keeping the band serious, because in like 2011 through, I'm just going to say like 2014, it seemed that the staple for bands all across the United States was to put out one or two EPs and then just break up.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I was like, I'm not trying to do this, you know, like, I want to be a band. And I started just kind of recruiting other people. And I had a homie that lived in Lincoln. I was living in Omaha. So Lincoln, Nebraska was where the Cornhuskers are.
Yeah.
That was probably 35, 40 minutes away. But he played drums. And I was like, hey, like, Purgatory's not doing anything right now. Some of the guys just, like, aren't feeling it. Do you want to play drums? And he was like, fuck yeah, let's do it. And then I had met this dude, Aaron, who played with us for quite a few years. And him and I kind of started hanging out. And he was a fan of the band. I was like, let's jam, you know, like, let's learn the old stuff and let's write some new stuff. And throughout that process of basically finding a whole new lineup, we wrote our second EP called Rabid Visions. And that one's a little more easier to find online than Hell on Earth is.
Yes.
But that lineup, we wrote Gospel of War after that. And so, you know, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but that lineup with Aaron and my buddy Bryce, and then we've always had like fill-ins and kind of had a revolving door for the band, because a lot of people either just didn't want to do the work or didn't take it seriously, or like that other things come up or they moved or whatever. But that was kind of the core four piece for us. And then Kyle, who played drums, but we wrote like a pretty solid chunk of material and played together and toured together for like a good couple years there. But that was the initial inception of Purgatory. We stemmed from another band and then just became a whole new entity on its own.
Well, that's interesting, because I didn't realize you guys had been around that long, and I also didn't realize that this is basically your band. It sounds like are you the only original in the band at this point?
Yeah, so, I mean, in all technicality, I've been the only original member since 2011 when we first started.
Yeah.
But when we broke up for a little while there and then started with the lineup that wrote Rabid Visions, like, that was a whole new lineup on its own. And so I've probably been the only original member since 2016, I'd say.
Nice. So I would say it's basically Matt's band. Not no offense to anybody in the band now, but it's been your thing. You've been carrying it the whole time, and that's very cool. And it's, you know, whether or not you're around the whole time or not, 10 years as a hardcore band or whatever you want to call yourselves is tough to do. People, like you mentioned, it's usually an EP or two and then out of there. So I don't know exactly when you came on my radar. It might have been the last Unbeaten record. At some point I felt like everybody was wearing a Purgatory hoodie, a real basic one. But that worked, you know, that's a weird thing that seems to work out for some people, and it worked out for you guys. So you got this. Wait, hold on a second. Did we get to the point where you end up in Indiana?
No, not yet. So that's a lot further down the line. I've only been here for like 2 or 3 years now.
Okay. Well, then, fuck Indiana. We're not talking about it. All right. So I wanted to get some background on the band. And then I want to make sure we cover plenty about the new record. So we're gonna leave a little bit of a gap in here, but we're gonna come up. We're gonna talk about what's happening now, because I've listened to Lawless to Grave quite a few times, and it's very cool. And my first question, this can't be the first time you were asked this, is what is up with that title? The grammar in it really fucks me up. Tell me what's going on here.
We definitely had somebody in the band, and some other people are like, why is it not Lawless to the Grave?
Yeah, that's it. That's my whole question.
Honestly, there's two reasons. It looks better on paper, just being Lawless to Grave. And we took a lot of inspiration from Dying Breed, Take My Soul, Give Me Grave.
Okay, yeah. Oh, I know a little Dying Breed maybe that I'd like to share with you. But anyway, go ahead.
The way that was laid out, that's like take my soul, give me grave, you know, like at your first instinct, you're like, what the fuck does that mean? You know, but like, I was even talking to Buddy and stuff and I was like, yo, I want to call the record Flawless to Grave, you know? And he was like, I fuck with it. Like, I love it, you know? And I was like, but like, some of the people are kind of tripping on the name and they think it should be Lawless to the Grave. And he was like, write it down on a fucking piece of paper and show it to him, you know? And he was like, they'll get it. He was like, I get it. So it's just kind of the aesthetic of it. And it's, I mean, yeah, the Dying Breed title was a huge influence for why we just decided to call it Lawless to Grave instead of being totally grammatically correct.
That's all right. I'll accept that answer. That's totally reasonable. Thing to me, because it's actually got a reason behind it. And I was just thinking, like, well, they watch a lot of, never mind, I'm not going to say what I was thinking. I'll get myself in trouble. But anyway, yeah, so I think that's very cool. Okay, so also with this record, I see you guys came all the way out to New Jersey to record with Len Carmichael, who happens to have the best birthday on earth, and which is November 17th. We share a birthday, much like only the correct okay. people do. So next time you want to wish Len a happy birthday, just think about it that it's my birthday too, and you should probably send me something. But you don't have to. There's no pressure. I'm just telling you. Anyway, so how did you end up working with Len all the way out in New Jersey? Is this like recommendation of Buddy? Is it just you heard the shit Len did at Landmine Studios and you got to work with him? How did this happen?
Yeah, so we've known about Len for a while. Obviously, he does so much stuff for, like, the This Is Hardcore videos. And that stuff's cool, but that's just, I don't want that to be his claim to fame, necessarily.
No.
You got to look at his roster. Like, fucking, he's done both Queensway records. He's recorded Lifeless. He's done Fury of Five shit. He's done so many bands where we're in love with the way those records sound. Like, there's no offense to be taken with the way that Cold Side of Reality sounds, because we've done two records at Bricktop in Chicago and they both sound great, and Cold Side sounds fucking awesome. But with like the kind of band that we are, and especially is kind of corny as it sounds when you see us live, it just doesn't transfer on that record. At the time we were like, yeah, this sounds super great. And as time goes on, it's got kind of a produced sound. We're a hard, aggressive, very raw band. And Len has put out so many records. Swift Minds of the Dark Side by Queensway is like a prime example of a record that is polished, but it still just sounds like dirty. You know, it sounds so heavy. And it brings out a lot more like real emotion in it. And when, like, and then Lifeless Dream too, that's another one where the way that it sonically sounds, it just draws you in. So when we were partway through writing Lawless, we're like, we need to start thinking about where we want to record. And all of us, literally off the bat, we're like, let's go to Len. I think there's only one guy that wanted to go back to Bricktop, but that's because he wasn't really aware of Len.
Yeah.
And I was like, dude, like, look at Len's roster and look at the records that he's done and then think about us as a band. And everybody was like, we have to fucking go to Len. Like, it was just a big no-brainer. And we hit him up right away. And we had tried to go, like, one or two other times, but, you know, COVID got in the way.
Yeah, fuck COVID. But so you... You brought up some interesting things there. First one, no, I'm not going to go first one because it's just a real elaborate story about how the singer from Queensway once was wearing my bench press sweatshirt and it was going to tie a whole bunch of things we said together. But that's a too complicated story. We're not getting into it. Okay, so the other thing, though, is it's funny that you mentioned the Lifeless Dream record, which I think is so underrated and so incredible. And but yeah. Anyway, but the and specifically... I got to say this specifically, the production and Jeremy Tingle's vocals on that record. But anyway, that when I was listening to Lawless to Grave earlier, there was parts that you were doing that reminded me of that. And I wasn't going to mention it, but you did. And so there's some parallels there. Which brings me to a question that I like to ask bands now about which Which of their peer, I mean, I know Lifeless hasn't been around for a while, but which bands that are happening now or recently do you find yourself influenced by or impressed by? Because it's always easy to say that, like, oh, it's these bands from the early 90s or late 80s, and that's the type of shit that we wanted to go off of. But I think it's more realistic to say there was this really great record, 10 years ago, that's fucking awesome, and I listen to it still all the time. So I don't know. So what catches your ears recently that you wanted to, I don't know, go forward with on Lawless to Grave?
My favorite hardcore band that's come out in the last five, I'm going to say 5 years, because I think that's current enough, is Queensway, hands down. Like, they draw a lot of influence from other bands, but they're all good bands. Obviously, the most comparable one is probably Stout, but Queensway is like they're like the modern day version of Stout. They do it in their own way. They're not like a ripoff band. There's something very genuine about what they do, but Pat has like some real shit that he sings about, and he's a very close friend of mine.
Oh, he is good.
And yeah, I love Pat, and we, I mean, even when they were writing The Real Fear, and when we were working on Lawless, we would send each other like lyrics back and forth all the time and just talk about stuff. But he's that's why that's a big reason why I know that Queensway is just, man, they're just a real ass band, but they have so much style. They're hard, they're heavy, they got groove though. Like when you listen to them, it's like, fuck, this is so intense, but it's also like it just makes you want to move too. Like, and
Yeah.
that's it's exciting. There's a different kind of energy, and it's a raw energy. But they're number one for me. I love Section Hate. I think Section Hate is a fucking amazing band too. Like, they're kind of taking a little bit of like the Cold as Life sound and using a lot of like straight up punk behind it too, because
Yeah.
I mean, Mexi Mike is like a, I mean, the dude is like a an encyclopedia for bands, and those dudes are as real as it gets as well. So you listen to Section Hate, and it's like, all right, man, like this stuff is so incredibly in your face, and it sounds reminiscent of older bands, but they do it in their own way, and it makes them their own unique band. But both of those bands, like, you can't be in a band and not draw influence from something else. It's whether you have the capability to make the band your own or not. Nobody wants to just hear like another knockoff, Agnostic Front or Madball or something. Like, that's been done. You got to take their influence and make your own sound with it. And I think those two bands do that flawlessly. So I love those bands. And then Lifeless too. I mean, who do you compare Lifeless to?
I don't know. I think I used to say, and I know that was rhetorical, but I used to say, like, it reminded me of Marauder. But then when they added like the kind of more Crowbar stuff, it was just I love what they did. I love what, specifically that Dream record. Yeah, I
Yeah.
don't know. I love that band. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I got a lot of personal ties to a lot of things that you said just there. J Money was a very close friend of mine, so I love Lifeless, of course. Like you mentioned, Queensway and basically Stout. Stout is probably the band that I've seen most in my life.
Okay, awesome.
And like, but when I was moving out of Baltimore, is about when Queensway was coming up, right? But I got to see them like coming up, and they were a cool one. And there's been an interesting thing that I think, and I don't mean to steer this whole conversation towards Baltimore bands, but Baltimore bands for some reason have this unique, like the ones that you hear about, Stout, Trapped Under Ice, Turnstile, Queensway, I don't know, Next Step Up, whatever. None of those sound the same, but
No.
they're all influenced by each other. Gut Instinct, like it all starts with Gut Instinct, Next Step Up, Stout, Trapped Under Ice, Turnstile, Queensway. Like it's all, like if you go in that succession, it's all they're all related, but all very different. And it's a, I don't know, it's a cool way. I wish other cities would evolve like that, and I'm sure they do, and I'm just unaware. I'm very biased, but anyway, yeah.
And I'm gonna touch base on that too, because I have a perspective that you guys don't have, being not from Baltimore. All of those bands, like being a kid from the Midwest, when I would see those bands, or I would think about those bands and like Baltimore as a whole, it's like, man, like, it's Baltimore's got a reputation going by Bodymore, obviously. Like, there's
right.
It's a Baltimore's got a reputation for being a scary place, and it's earned that acclaim. But these,
oh yeah, I've woken up in the hospital.
Right,
I woke up in the hospital with my mouth slit open. Yeah, with my brain bleeding. It happened to me. Yeah, Baltimore's real. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So when you're from the Midwest, like we, like I. Me and like some of my friends, we would view these bands as like almost being part of this like whole other underworld. Like you read Tad from Stout's lyrics, and you read Next Step Up lyrics, and like you read Queensway lyrics, you read Trapped Under Ice lyrics. Like where the, like part of you is like, where the fuck do these guys live? You know, like there's like this crazy underworld that's just like full of these mutant hardcore bands. But it was like the coolest shit in the world to me. Like, I didn't like, it wasn't an instance where like I idolized these guys necessarily. I was like, I want to know like what they're about. I want to see these bands. I want to understand this in person. Cause I've lived in some really, really fucking bad areas and gone through plenty of my fair share of not exciting, but exciting things as well. But when you're from the Midwest, you're from the Midwest, and when you have a bunch of bands from Baltimore, and Baltimore's just got like this dark, grimy aura over it, and this hardcore coming out of that, like that's the hardest shit. Like it's just crazy. Like, and then you meet people from Baltimore and you play with their bands, and then you play there eventually, and it kind of almost is like everything that you were fantasizing it was about. We play a sidebar a couple times.
Best venue in the world.
Like, even, yeah, like the sidebar's fucking awesome. And it's like kind of in like a dark little bit of like a dingy area, and you're played down in like, you know, like this darker area that's off to the side, and like the whole surroundings, like, yep, like everything that I thought about Baltimore is what I'm experiencing in Baltimore right now.
That makes me so happy to hear that. Baltimore, or I'm sorry, but like I said, Baltimore was my home for many years, but it's where my daughter was born. But the sidebar specifically has always been my favorite venue since the first time I ever went there. We used to have shows out in the parking lot. Oh man. Anyway, I can get all wrapped up talking about Baltimore, but I I don't want to do that because I want to talk to you about Purgatory.
Sure.
And but bringing up all the, like these different places is just because we're talking about Baltimore. You've mentioned how you've moved around, and maybe that's why you like everything that I see about Purgatory just mentions the Midwest, because you don't really have roots laid down anywhere. Do you feel like that's been a hindrance in any way to your band, not being able to say we're from this place and we rep this place?
Absolutely. Like when we started in Nebraska, it was easy because that's where the inception was. But then from Nebraska, I moved out to Atlanta. And dude, there was a point in time where I lived in Atlanta. Our drummer lived in Tennessee, our guitar player lived in Iowa, and our other guitar player and bass player lived in fucking Arizona.
Well, yeah, that's ridiculous.
So it was like so much for local shows, you know, that's not happening. We had like a B team basically that were a little more centralized, closer to me. So if we wanted to play like little one-off things or maybe do like a 2-day weekend run, it was like, all right, like, and I don't want to say B team, like they weren't talented musicians. I more so mean like, you know, just, they were a group of dudes. Just, it was a couple of the guys from Chamber and then Adam from Orthodox.
Easterling.
They played. They would fill in for Purgatory all the time.
Okay.
And so we would play like just little one-off things, just so we could keep playing. Because I didn't want to be just a touring band. Like, it's no offense to bands that do that, but I can't just tour. I need to play shows. Like, even if it's just one, I don't want to wait to go on tour. But that, after I moved to Nebraska and we became spread out like that, I'll definitely say that it fucked things up. And then from Atlanta, I moved to Indiana, and I've always been really, really tight with people from Indiana for a long, long time now. And half the band lives here anyways. So we rep Indiana really hard because this is where the roots of the band are laid down now. This is where our foundation is, and it's been that way for years. I mean, I own a house here. I bought a house here. I'm not going anywhere. And the other guys, Brian, who plays guitar for us, he's been playing for Purgatory on and off since like 2016, and he's from Indiana. And like, we used to have fill-ins from Indiana, so it became like home team right away. And but it's still hard, you know, because believe it or not, like there's people out here from Indiana and like right across the border over in Illinois and stuff. I try and talk shit on us repping Indiana, because they're like, you ain't fucking from here. And I'm like, you're mad because I'm repping our state when we go out on tour and bringing attention back to like a small silly little scene. You're fucking mad about that?
Yeah. I believe it.
So yeah.
Because
it's weird, you know? It's weird. I don't know.
that is when hardcore is the stupidest thing on earth. All right? And this is something that, not even in hindsight, I've always felt this way. The whole like territorial thing of the hardcore scene is so fucking bizarre. It's like you it's not cool to be from there. It's not cool to rep there. But you better respect it. But you bet, like, what the fuck? What like everybody's real into their area codes. But you don't come in here. Don't talk about it. Don't be like, it's very confusing and ass backwards. And as a full fucking grown adult, it's super silly. And I thought that shit was mostly gone, but I'm not surprised if it's still there.
It is weird. I'm in the same boat. It's like, yo, we all fly under the same flag here. And like, there's a lot of like little exclusive groups all over the United States. And hey, like, I am totally, totally aware that there's like New York hardcore, LA hardcore, and those, and like the East Coast and West Coast, and their areas ride super hard for each other. And like, there is just an overwhelming amount of really good bands from those areas. But there's hardcore that exists in other parts of the country as well. One of my biggest qualms, though, is kids in the Midwest are very, very naive. And instead of being like, hey, like, if we all band together and build up the Midwest, we can be like the coast. Instead, they're like, no, I want to fucking jock the East Coast, or I want to jock the West Coast. And it's like, you're leaving your local bands hanging.
Yeah, you know? It's lame.
All you kids need to ride for the Midwest hard as shit and make it seem like we have the biggest scene on the fucking planet. And then that's going to make other people be like, all right, I got to see what's up with Indiana, or I got to see what's up with Chicago. I want to go play there.
I was going to say, Chicago feels like that's what they're doing. The amount of bands coming out of Chicago right now is impressive, and all of them are good, you know? So at least the ones
Chicago
that I'm here.
Holding it down.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're holding it down. And we try and ride with Chicago, because it's like, I mean, it's 40 miles away. It's like 38 miles away from my house, you know? So we don't try and belong to Chicago hardcore, but we ride with those fans really hard because they're friends, they're close, but all that's going to do is just help our general area. It's Indiana. I mean, Indiana has a struggling hardcore scene. There's just not many bands and there's not a lot of kids, but we're so close to Chicago. Like, we can go play there, and we're so close to Milwaukee. We can play there, and both those scenes come and play in Indiana too. So it's like, hey, like, we don't need to be competing against each other, for as silly as it is to even compete in hardcore in the first place. Like, we fuck with your band, we fuck with your band. Let's just ride this thing together, you know?
It's the competition in hardcore is ridiculous. There's like a couple thousand people into the fucking genre, and people want to argue over it. It's super silly. But yeah, I mean, I'm using a lot of hyperbole, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
but
I do. I'm on the same boat. So
let's steer back to Purgatory again. We keep getting off track, and that's all right. I have no problem with that. But I want to make sure we talk about your band and Lawless to the Grave, and the fact that it comes out on April 9th, my brother's birthday, on Unbeaten Records. You put out at least two singles already, maybe more, but I know of Stack 'Em Up and No One Gets Out Alive are out there for everybody else. How's that been received so far?
It's been cool. Stack 'Em Up had a pretty big, like, I want to say, like, premiere, basically. Like, the folks over at Metal Injection were cool enough to, like, pick it up and premiere it on their site. So drew a lot of eyes from people that might not have ever heard of us before, or even bothered to check us out. And No One Gets It Alive it steadily picks up steam. Like, there's more and more people checking it out. And I think by the time that the record comes out, like, and even when the record does actually come out and they hear the rest of the songs, it's gonna draw a ton of attention toward both those songs. And like, I don't want to sound like I'm tooting my own horn here, but both of those songs, especially No One Gets Out Alive, are fucking awesome. So like, if anybody checks it out, it's exciting because they generally feel the same way about it that we do.
Yeah.
So it's been cool. Like, if one kid or 100 kids or 1,000 kids listen to it and are like, yo, this is the shit, that's like the coolest thing in the world.
Well, what kind of expectations, I guess, do you have for yourself in this record with the limited things you can do? I mean, I talk about this a lot now with people, and I can't believe that I've been talking about this to people for over a year now. But all you can do is this, and I don't know. You can do this, and you can do like live streams or whatever. So, like, what are you anticipating, and what are you looking forward to when this officially gets released?
I don't see any reason at all why it shouldn't be on everybody's radar. And it's because of the things that you just said. People are dying for a hardcore show. Mm-hmm. They're dying for it. And I get it, because we are too. But in the meantime, you don't have access to that. So all you can do is listen to music and pay attention to what hardcore bands are doing. What? There's not that many of us out here like dropping records and dropping songs right now. So my expectation is this should be fucking everywhere. And it's not because I think we're the best band in the world, but Lawless to Grave should be on everybody's radar because we're a hardcore band that's dropping new music during a pandemic when other bands aren't.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think that's something that I've been trying to preach to a lot of people, is now is the time to put them out too. You got a kind of a captive audience. Like, yeah, just let it go, let it fly. And I think it's very cool that you guys are doing this, and that Unbeaten's on board to put out music during a pandemic. Because I know it's a risk for labels, you know, too. Because whatever,
but it is.
But it seems like Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say. I mean, there's a lot of people that are afraid to put on music because they can't go play on it right away or tour on it right away, but like, kids are going to be able to listen to stuff and get familiar with it before you go play. So you don't run the risk of like dropping this and then go playing a show and being like, we're going to play a couple new songs. And everybody's like, didn't even know you had new music out, you know? Like, so it's, I don't know. I'm looking forward to when we play our first show back, because the record's going to be out for a little while. And like I said, unless you're just choosing not to pay attention or you just don't want to check it out, I do have an expectation that the record is going to reach a lot of ears and a lot of eyes.
Well, that's good, and I love the honesty of it, because a lot of people say they don't have any expectations because of this, but I like what you're thinking, and I agree with it completely. And I hope it works out because I don't see any reason why I shouldn't. Like I said, I've listened to the record several times over. It's fucking awesome, super heavy, a little bit dynamic, a little bit, I think a little bit, some things I wasn't expecting from you guys. And you know, minor things, but some things that I wasn't expecting from you guys. And I think it's awesome. We've been going on for about an hour, so we should probably wrap it up. I want to say one thing though. I already see that, you guys have already doing pre-orders, right?
Yeah.
And that seems to be going well from what I saw, some posts about things almost being sold out.
Yeah, both. I know one of the records might be sold out now, and the other one is down to slim pickings. And I don't know what the plans are for a second pressing right now, so it's kind of a, you know, grab them while you can type thing.
Well, shit, people are going to miss it because I bet this one will come out, this episode you and I are doing right now will come out on like March 22nd. So if there's anything still left, good luck. But yeah, but anyway, I just wanted to recognize that you guys are doing well already. And that's got to be an encouraging thing.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Like, I know I just said that I got expectations for certain things, but at the same time, like, I never expect people to like buy our music or support us in that way. Like I think that people are gonna hear our music and see our music and things like that, but to go as far as to spend money on it, I mean, that's always humbling. That's just awesome.
Yeah All right, dude, well, hey, I want to thank you for taking the time to have this conversation. I had a lot of fun. I hope you did too. I'm looking forward to other people hearing this record, and always glad to support anything on Unbeaten, and of course Purgatory. Like I said, I've been listening to you guys for a while, but this one is definitely your best, and I think everyone else will agree. That's it, man.
Thank you, man, for real. I appreciate this opportunity a ton. Thank you for the kind words.
Absolutely. All right, talk to you later, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a good night.
You too. So there you have it. That was my conversation with Matt, and the song you just heard was Loyalty Denied. They just put out a video for that track, so be sure to go check that out before you pick up the record on April 9th from Unbeaten Records, which I know you'll do. You're totally convinced. I didn't need to do a lot of convincing. The music did it for you, but Matt's charm might have worked its magic as well. All right, so what else do we got to talk about on this one? Well, the NBA trade deadline is over. The Sixers didn't do anything spectacular, but they did land George Hill and didn't overpay for Kyle Lowry. So we're all happy about that, right? Okay, I thought so. What else is happening with the Getting It Out podcast? Well, the usual. The website comes eventually. I'm told before the NFL draft, so we can shake our heads about the moves the Eagles made publicly, but that will basically just be an article, which is a facepalm. All the people who hate sports who listen to this are like, Jesus, man, shut the fuck up about it. But that's all right. I'm just going to do what I want because that's what I do. And that seems to be bothering a lot of people in specifically the hardcore podcast community lately. And that's very funny, and it's very passive-aggressive, and nobody's saying it to my face. They're saying it to other people. I just wanted to put that in here at the end, that I'm aware, all right? I see it. If we're all going to be passive-aggressive, let's just keep it that way, all right? But let's not pretend it's not happening either, okay? Fucking dorks. Okay, so as I mentioned, gettingitout.net is well on its way. It has to be. The Instagram page at getting_it_out_podcast is raring. And what does raring mean? It's happening. That's the place to be, especially lately. Got a lot of giveaways going on. Right beside me, I got two packages that are going out to recent winners on the Getting It Out Instagram giveaways. They're pretty decent packages, I got to tell you. The last one that I just boxed up, you had at least one LP, 2 7-inches, 2 CDs, a t-shirt, a bunch of stickers, some pins. And that's just for commenting on a post. You can get a lot of those if you just follow Getting It Out on Instagram.com. Is Instagram a .com? I think it is. Anyways, you can also go to the Facebook.com/Getting It Out Podcast. And if you're a real person, if you're the best type of person, you can go to Patreon.com/Getting It Out Podcast and sign up to be a contributor, and you'll be greatly appreciated. And I'll just send you stuff for free when you do that. That's what I do with everybody. Just got to remember to put your address in there, and I'll get you something at least. And when you do that, I automatically enter you into these giveaways. Nobody's won that way yet, but somebody will. There's enough of you that somebody's eventually going to win that way. But yeah, I appreciate everybody who does that. It's only $3 a month at most, and as low as $1 a month, and that's pretty cool. Think of it as buying one band t-shirt. Think of it as getting into one show, but it lasts all year long. That's the way to do it, and I appreciate it. All right, let's wrap this one up with a song from New Hampshire's Wargraves. I call them hardcore punk. You can call them whatever we want, but the song is from their Grim Winter EP, and the track is called Secret Key. Check it out. Check them out, and have a good day. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.